the Learning Lab at WEAA 88.9 FM on the campus of Morgan State University, the School of Global Journalism and Communication presents the Morgan News Hour. Welcome to the Morgan News Hour here on WEAA 88.9 FM. I'm Randy Reed.
I'm Demi Goff, co-host of the Morgan News Hour. Thanks for joining us.
The 20-year anniversary of 9/11 terror attacks is tomorrow. We reflect on where we were on that day.
Mayor Scott and Health Commissioner Dr. Geraza gave an update on the city's response to COVID, the reason why they're not jumping on board with the state's plan to administer booster shots.
A new study reveals growing racial disparity and opioid death rates and why health care is to blame. The Maryland Department of Health updated COVID-19 numbers this morning. 1,553 new cases were reported in the past 24 hours. 14 new patients were admitted into the hospital. 830 people are currently hospitalized due to COVID. 15 deaths have been reported. The state's positivity rate is 4.67%.
Today, Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott held a press conference with Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. Letitia Geraza. There has been a 25% increase in deaths in the last 2 weeks.
As of yesterday, as you can see, Baltimore City is averaging almost 85 cases per day, an increase of 8.6% from 2 weeks ago. Our positivity is 2.4%, a decrease of 23% from 2 weeks ago. We've seen 138 COVID-19 hospitalizations in the past 2 weeks. And to date, 56,649 city residents have tested positive for COVID-19. Based on the data, per CDC's definition, Baltimore remains in the substantial community transmission category. While recently there have been announcements regarding the availability of booster doses, at this time, I would like to remind residents that the Health Department continues to follow the science and direction of the FDA and CDC. Currently, an additional COVID-19 dose for the general public, including older adults, has not yet been authorized by the FDA or recommended by the CDC. The Health Department does not recommend off-label use of the COVID-19 vaccine and will not be administering booster doses until there's full approval from the FDA and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices.
To date, the Baltimore City Fire Department has administered 347 vaccinations to people in their homes. You can contact the Fire Department to make an appointment to get your vaccination shot.
A day before the 9/11 anniversary, Washington is remembering and reflecting. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sigar Megani reports.
A day before the 9/11 anniversary, Washington is remembering and reflecting. From the Pentagon to the Justice and State Departments.
20 years after September 11, 2001.
That day is forever seared into all of our memories.
It felt somehow deeply personal, and I think it still does.
Pain, the terror.
We each have our own 9/11 story.
For then Army officer Matthew Klimo, it was sitting in a Pentagon command center hearing President Bush issue orders.
I want you to find out who did this. I want you to track them down, and I want you to destroy them.
20 years later, General John Hyten, the Pentagon's number two officer, says the military did its job.
We kept our nation safe.
Sagar Megani, Washington.
So, Demi, where were you on September 11th?
September 11th, 2001. I was actually in the second grade. Mm-hmm. I was in elementary school, and I remember we were at recess. And all the teachers, they were having a meeting, and then they just came around. It was like we had to take the kids back into the school. They were trying to figure out, I guess, the next best option. Mm-hmm. And we ended up being dismissed early and told to go home. And, you know, I think we came back the next day, mm-hmm. and we talked about it in school, what happened. And we were given, like, a project. And I remember drawing, making a picture of the Twin Towers with the smoke coming out of it. And we just talked about, I guess, how we felt about the situation. But we really didn't know much about what happened, and the teachers weren't too sure, I guess, until after the fact, because I remember something happening at the Pentagon, mm-hmm. and it just felt like, you know, we're close to the Pentagon, so we need to send the students home before anything else happens.
Right. Andre?
I was a young whippersnapper myself, mm-hmm. not as not as young as our superstar Demi over here. I was in eighth grade, and I remember that our principal came into the room, and I thought somebody was in trouble.
Right.
You know, like back then, you feel like you're in trouble, like even if you didn't do anything. But when she walked in, she turned the TV on, and it was really a frightening experience because you don't see that happening here in America.
Right.
But she just had us guide the rest of the school. And I remember we were like the last class to leave. But then conversations about what was happening, and there was a lot of like, it made you kind of grow up real fast because of what happened.
Right.
But it's a day that I will never forget because I can like still see myself there right now.
Right. So I was 4 days into starting my new job as a news director back in upstate New York. I believe I started that Thursday before, and I believe 9/11 was on a Tuesday, if I remember. And I remember coming into the office, and our weatherman had come in. I don't think turned on my TVs yet, and announced that a plane had hit a building in New York City. I turned on everything, and the next thing I know, I'm working the next 18 hours, you know, there trying to cover that. I mean, everyone was reporting. My sports director was reporting news and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I remember that day. It was a long day, and you know, we obviously covered it over the next month or so. But yeah, I mean, we even sent a crew down from there because we knew so many people that were there or that were in the towers from our area. And then we had a dentist who came down to New York City because he was a dental forensic person. So he had to help identify the bodies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So now it was an interesting day. And, yeah, I remember exactly where I was.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Now, have y'all been to the site since the attack?
I haven't really. I've driven by it. I've seen it, and it does look like eerily strange.
It's eerie to go to. But I mean, I would suggest people to still visit the area.
Right. No.
But I know I've saw reports that they are still rebuilding, or they're at least trying to rebuild some of what was there. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's taken a little while. It's 20 years, and that's like a site where so much happened, so much loss, you know, that you it's impossible to try to rebuild.
Right. No. And like I said, we have a Elmire College is there, and there was a student there who happened to pass away. I think they were interning there, I believe.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. So, so now let's take a look at the news around our region.
Don't look for any ceremonial street signs to go up anytime soon in Baltimore. The city is suspending the program after a sign honoring a convicted drug dealer was erected in Pigtown. The sign paid tribute to Anthony Covington, a convicted drug dealer who was killed in Pigtown last year. A spokesman for the city said the sign moved through the process without proper approval. It was requested by Covington's sister, who was an employee of the Baltimore Department of Transportation. And four of the world's largest cranes have dropped anchor in the port of Baltimore. The cranes ended their 2-month voyage from China and barely made it under the Chesapeake and Key bridges before arriving in the port. The cranes cost $50 million, and they are part of the $166 million public-private partnership investment in the port. State officials say the cranes will help Baltimore to become one of the most efficient supply chains in America. The new equipment is expected to increase production at the Port of Baltimore. Finally, a cruise ship is preparing to set sail this weekend. The Carnival Pride will embark on a 7-day trip to the Bahamas, marking the first cruise to depart the Port of Baltimore in 18 months. Carnival Cruise Line is requiring passengers on the voyage to be fully vaccinated for COVID-19 and must present their vaccination cards upon arrival at the port. Additionally, the ship will test all passengers for the virus. The Saturday Sailing is the first cruise ship to leave the port since Royal Caribbean's Grandeur of the Seas arrived in the port in March 2020, dry docking all future sailings due to the pandemic. That's a look at news around the region. I'm Carol Williams, reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
Now let's take a look at your weather around the region and for your weekend. Tonight, clear with a low around 62. Saturday should be a great day, sunny with a high near 81. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 64. Sunday, sunny, high near 89. Sunday night, mostly clear with a low around 70. On Monday, sunny, high near 91. And Monday night, partly cloudy with a low around 70. That's a look at your weather around the region.
You're listening to the Morgan News Hour on WEAA. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the Morgan News Hour here on WEAA 88.9 FM. In a rare interview, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer spoke to NPR's Tina Totenberg about his new book called The Authority of the Court and the Peril of Politics. Justice Breyer has a warning for those who want to remake the court.
I've learned over time that it's very, very difficult to get people who think that the court decision, a court decision, some court decision, is totally wrong, to think, well, I should follow it nonetheless. And the person I heard say that, Harry Reid, the head of the Democrats, after what case? Bush v. Gore. Okay. He said the most remarkable thing about this case is something that's rarely remarked, even though it affected a lot of people. And probably half the country didn't like it at all. And it was totally wrong in his opinion and in mine. All right. People followed it, and they didn't throw brickbats at each other, and they didn't shoot each other, and they didn't have riots. Saying here, too, what goes around comes around. And if the Democrats can do it, the Republicans can do it. And therefore, beware, be careful. The court does change very slowly over time. That's the nature of this country. I see in front of me every single day. I mean, those people, 330 million, and they believe, even if they don't know what's in this document, they think this is one of the things that helps to hold us together. And I believe that. It's one of the things that it's allowed this very, very diverse country to function as a single country. And it's either rule of law, or it could be dictatorship, or tyranny, or something worse. And so that's what I tell the students, because I add one other thing. Hey, it's your world now. And it's up to you, senior in high school, senior in college, law school student. It's up to you, my friends, to try to figure out how in this country, which has this document and which has the values that underlie this document, it's up to you to figure out how to live together harmoniously, peacefully, and productively.
President Biden is seeing pushback from lawmakers about his vaccine mandates for employers. American Urban Radio Network's Ebony McMorris reports.
AURN News.
I'm Ebony McMorris. Many Republican lawmakers are already pushing back on the president's new vaccine mandates. Colorado Congressman Ken Buck.
And I'd much rather see it done at the state and local level. I think whenever you have a one-size-fits-all mandate from the federal government, it just doesn't meet the America's needs.
In the president's new executive order, all employers with 100 or more employees have to make sure that their workforce is fully vaccinated. Those who are not have to get tested weekly. All employees of contractors that do business with the federal government must be vaccinated. He's requiring vaccinations for workers in most health care settings that receive Medicare or Medicaid reimbursement. Teachers and staff at Head Start and Early Head Start programs must also get vaccinated. TSA can now double the fines for those who do not mask up at airports and on certain modes of public transportation. And while lawsuits are already piling up, the president hopes that governors are getting on board with these new mandates. For AURN News, I'm Ebony McMorris.
A study published Thursday reveals a growing racial disparity in opioid overdose death rates. Deaths among African Americans are growing faster than among whites across the country. The study authors call for an anti-racist public health approach to address the crisis in black communities. The study, conducted in partnership with the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the National Institutes of Health, analyzed overdose data and death certificates from four states, Kentucky, Ohio, Massachusetts, and New York. It found that the rate of opioid deaths among blacks increased by 38% from 2018 to 2019, while rates for other racial and ethnic groups did not rise. Dr. Edwin Chapman, an internal medicine and addiction specialist, says the study is helpful because it shows the serious impact of opioid addiction on black Americans. Quote, it points out the fact that we have to do something different, a more intensive intervention program in the African-American community, he says. What's behind the disparity? Structural differences in healthcare are to blame for racial disparities in addiction treatment. The rise in fentanyl, a powerful synthetic opioid that is often laced in heroin, has also affected rates of overdose deaths among blacks. The main driver of overdose deaths has changed from prescription opioid, then to heroin, and now to fentanyl. Overdose deaths in the black communities are largely caused by fentanyl, according to the report.
Stay with us here on the Morgan News Hour. We'll be right back. To the Morgan News Hour here on WEAA 88.9 FM. Let's get a check on the weather.
Now let's take a look at your weather around the region and for your weekend. Tonight, clear with a low around 62. Saturday should be a great day, sunny with a high near 81. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 64. Sunday, sunny, high near 89. Sunday night, mostly clear with a low around 70. On Monday, sunny, high near 91. And Monday night, partly cloudy with a low around 70. That's a look at your weather around the region.
We have a new weekly feature here on the Morgan News Hour. Every Friday, we will air a segment from our new sports department with the help of Professor Edward Robinson and the students in the School of Global Journalism and Communication. The new show is called The Morgan Show. Will be hosted by the voice of Morgan State football, Lamont Germany, and Morgan student Kayla Sweezy. The Morgan Show features coaches and players from the Morgan Athletic Department. The Morgan Show will air Fridays on WEAA.org. You can go to it now, and it's there. Tonight's segment features Morgan State football coach Tyrone Wheatley
and his thoughts about last week's game and looking ahead to Tulane University this Saturday.
I'm Lamont Germany, hanging out at practice with Morgan State head football coach Tyrone Wheatley in preparation for their week two encounter in Birmingham, Alabama, against the Green Wave of Tulane. Coach, we appreciate the visit. Before we talk about the challenge ahead in the Green Wave, let's visit last weekend here at home against the Towson University Tigers. Final score, I'm sure, wasn't what you had hoped it would be.
Absolutely not.
Talk to me about the overall assessment, both the good and the bad of what you saw from your team last Saturday.
First of all, I want to just say I truly appreciate the fan turnout. It was awesome. You know, the stands were full, people sitting on the grass. It was incredible. And we want to get back to getting those people back out, right? It's our job to fill the stands and put up a good football game. So leading to the question asked was, let's get with the bad. Deer in headlights, right? No excuse. Townsend didn't play in the spring. We didn't play in the spring. I think at the end of the day, our guys came out, was a little overwhelmed, which is my fault, right? I'm the head coach. I got to get them ready. I got to get them prepared. I have to put them in situations to where they're not overwhelmed. But they're humans. They were overwhelmed a little bit. But defensively, our defense came out and played hard. They played hard. They played physical. But you can't leave them on the field too long, right? Can't leave them on the field. They got a little bit wore down, and they just took advantage. As I said earlier in the podcast was, we have to play defense through our offense, and we didn't do that. We couldn't convert on third down. We didn't have any many conversions. I think we converted maybe 5 out of 14, I think, was the final stat. That's not good. We have to convert. We had some really, really good plays. So now we talk about the good, the things that are correctable, right? There wasn't as dominating as you think it was to score. We have some little things that we can clean up. Like we go to the very first run play. There's a crease about a mile long, mile wide. Jabril is probably still running if we just block the right person, right? We've run that play numerous of times. And once again, it goes back to what happened. I just saw a guy. No, see a key, right? We tell the guys, if you see a little, you see a lot, meaning just pay attention to your keys. And the game just kind of got away from them, right? So that's the good part, because there are some things that are correctable.
Coach, let's talk to Lane. I'm sure you saw tape of their encounter with Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
Number two team in the country on their opening weekend and almost beat them. And you can make an argument maybe they should have beat them. So you got a team clearly talented. Talk to me about what you've seen from Tulane, what you anticipate this weekend.
Well, tales of two tapes, right? Two sides of the coin. Townsend comes out, physical, downhill, 21, 22 personnel coming at you. Tulane, spread them out, speed, speed, and more speed. Quarterback, can hurt you with his arm, also with his legs. Starks, great receivers. Good, once again, speed on the outside. These guys run great routes, and they're dangerous after the catch. So, you know, right now you have to flip your mindset. So you go from downhill, pounding, getting physical, to now all of a sudden they're coming at you and they're trying to run by you. So you just have to get their mindset switching that deal. But they're a great team. They're a great team. You know, they play. They've got some older guys. And they're in sync. They're in sync and they're on the roll.
Well, we got to see if we can handle them this weekend. Talk to me about how we came off of the Towson game injury-wise. Are we healthy?
We're a little healthy. I mean, you know, other than just football, right? Other than just your normal nicks and your necks and little bumps and bruises here and there, but relatively we're healthy.
Lastly, Coach, first game on the road. Kind of disrupts the routine a little bit. You lose a day of practice. Talk to me how that impacts your preparation as you get set to go to Birmingham.
Honestly, it doesn't. Like, what you do is you try not to make those things distractions, right? You try not to say we lose a day, right? You just you practice those things and you do those things in camp. To try and prepare for this in early, so they get attacked to it, and then they become a repetition, and it becomes a part of your repertoire, right? So there's no quote-unquote, you know, is it out of sorts for us? No.
Lastly, Coach, we saw, I think, 3 quarterbacks on Saturday.
Yes.
Against Towson. Any change in the quarterback rotation for this weekend's game against Tulane?
Right now, we're still working through it, you know. I think that's one of the things right now. The great thing about football, great thing about sports, right? We get a chance to do over, we get a chance to watch film, and we get a chance to move some things around to try and figure some things out. And And that's the great part about it. So right now, do we have it solidified? No, we're still pushing. Guys are still going. And one thing I will say about that quarterback room, they're for one another. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a great deal. And, I mean, you talk about the overall silver lining of this team. We're a young team. And
very.
I like this team. I like it. We're a young team, and I like this. I mean, we fielded a young team against a very, very, like I say, organized and structured older team. And we didn't do bad.
Well, they hope to do better this weekend. That's the coach. That's Tyrone Wheatley. Getting the Bears set for their encounter on Saturday against the Green Wave of Tulane. Coach, we appreciate the visit today.
No problem. Thank you.
Good luck in Birmingham.
Thank you.
Mark September 16th on your calendar. Two-time Grammy Award-nominated rapper Cordae will conduct an HBCU campus takeover among the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference's 8-member institutions, including Morgan State. The campus takeover, Kicking It with Cordae, will make a stop at Morgan State on September 16th. One of Morgan State's esports athletes will be competing against Cordae in NBA 2K. While promoting his upcoming album, Cordae will be visiting each MEAC campus to visit with students, give them a sneak peek into his music, and engage in conversations about topics important to students. Cordae, a first-generation college student and native of Suitland, Maryland, is also a gamer, so the events will also promote each campus's esport program through gaming, music, and conversations with Cordae, which will also include an opportunity for students to compete against Cordae. I'm Rochelle Keaton, reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
Each night we feature highlights from our afternoon shows, today with Dr. K and Two-Way Talk. So in case you missed it, here is a clip of both.
That you never know if this ever will happen again. We don't know. We don't know. But to say this and say this, Dr. K, I'm glad that everything is okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we have seen, you know, what could be, how we came through seeing the devastation of New York City, how many people are really looking at this and don't take nothing for granted. And like this, I'm going to say this, I'm in with this. Just keep guarding your life and just keep praying. Just pray every day.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Just keep your head above water and just keep praying. Thank you, Dr. K. You have a beautiful weekend, and I hope to talk to you again.
Thank you so much. Folks, interesting because when you think about that time, I know it shifted for us. We actually moved out of New York the following year. Like, we had been in New York. I had been there for a minute, having worked up through MTV to doing the PBS affiliate. My husband was working for Ross Perot. He was doing political consulting work. Like, we were there for a minute. We had made our home. We were living in Harlem. And that just changed everything. Like, that event, not just the buildings coming down, right? We're talking about just the devastating loss to the city. The devastating loss to my husband and co-workers. Like, it was just a very rough time in the city. And I remember when they closed New York down, like, nobody could move. So you think, yes, the shutdown was rough when we shut down for COVID-19. I remember the shutdown for 9/11. Like,
welcome to Two-Way Talk.
I don't think it's a really big deal. I think we're just making too much out of it myself.
Mm. Well, I think that certainly I respect your opinion, but some people believe that it is a huge deal, a needle going into their child or going into their grandmother to vaccinate them. And there are lots of questions. I mean, people have called and challenged both of us at times on the air. We've talked to health professionals out the yin yang mm-hmm. about all of the concerns that people have.
Yeah. Okay.
And something people think it's a big deal to be made to do something.
Yeah,
too.
To be made to do something. Yeah, go ahead,
Stephen. Say something though. I can understand for the children who are minors or even maybe teenagers, but I can't see where it would be a big deal if you're like 21 or over 21.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I'm just not, you know, picking up on. I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Gary, thank you. Thank you so much.
Up next, we hear from our own Ravens reporter, Cordell Woodland, on his thoughts about the Ravens Monday night game. We will also have our live sports report and your entertainment up next, so stay with us.
Now let's take a look at your weather around the region and for your weekend. Tonight, clear with a low around 62. Saturday should be a great day, sunny with a high near 81. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 64. Sunday, sunny, high near 89. Sunday night, mostly clear with a low around 70. On Monday, sunny, high near 91. And Monday night, partly cloudy with a low around 70. That's a look at your weather around the region. This Monday night in primetime, our Baltimore Ravens will start their season in Las Vegas. But first, we are joined by the newest member of our Morgan News Hour family, Cordell Woodland. Cordell has been assigned to cover the Baltimore Ravens as a credentialed media reporter. The NFL season kicked off last night with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. This Monday night in primetime, our Baltimore Ravens will start their season in Las Vegas. But first, we are joined by the newest member of the Morgan News Hour family, Cordell Woodland. Cordell has been assigned to cover the Baltimore Ravens as a credentialed media reporter. Thanks to the Baltimore Ravens for working with us on that. Every Friday, Cordell will provide a preview of the upcoming game and join us the day after with some thoughts and takeaways. Cordell will also have access to players, so he will also be able to provide us with player profiles and stories throughout the week. This week's preview, we talk injuries, is there pressure on Lamar, and finally, the game on Monday night against the Raiders. Get us everyone up to date in terms of, I saw a rash of injuries from the Baltimore Ravens. What are your thoughts?
A lot's going on right now for the Ravens. A lot of bad luck. They started off the preseason losing their linebacker, L.J. Fort, to an ACL. He's gone for the year. The next week, J.K. Dobbins, their starting running back, he injures his ACL. He tears his ACL on the first drive against the Washington football team. He's gone for the year. A couple days later, Justice Hill, who's the third string back, came out that he, I believe, tore his Achilles at practice. And then just yesterday, the guy who was supposed to be the new starting running back, Gus Edwards, he tore his ACL at practice yesterday. They weren't even in pads. And then the very next play, Marcus Peters tears his ACL, who's the starting corner. And I believe he's in a contract year this year. So the Ravens have the injury bug is biting them at the worst time possible with their game coming up on Monday night.
And so what someone asked me this yesterday, why all the injuries and are they practicing like they used to, you know, because I thought there was like restrictions on practicing and, you know, getting hit and things like that, getting used to it in the preseason.
Well, quite a few of them have been freak accidents. I mean, the J.K. Dobbins one against the football team, that was on, I believe, his first or second carry of the game. It was a freak play. You can't predict it. A lot of these injuries are really just part of the game. The ones yesterday, I mean, God, I can't explain it. Nobody can. I mean, they weren't in pads. Apparently, Marcus Peters one at least. It came when he was doing a drill that, and he broke out of he made a break that he's done 1,000 times, and then all of a sudden, you know, his ACL is gone. So, I mean, it's just really unfortunate, and sometimes this happens to a team going into the start of the season, and unfortunately, it happened to be the Ravens this year.
So in terms of the signings, the people that are they're signing to replace, what do you think?
Well, the Ravens did bring in Devontae Freeman, who was the former running back for the Falcons, and last year he was with the Giants. But more notably, I'm sorry, they also brought in Le'Veon Bell the other day. Who we all know from his time in Pittsburgh last year was a pretty the last few years really have been a pretty down years for Le'Veon Bell since he's been out with the Jets. But recently, today, they signed Latavius Murray, who was cut by the Saints, I believe, last week. And Latavius Murray is coming off his best year of his career. So that's the guy that I believe is going to all even if it doesn't turn out to be that way Monday. And Harbaugh talked today and he mentioned that he's just going to see where these guys are at. But he did say Latavius Murray will be on the active roster Monday night. So I believe Latavius Murray going forward, he's going to be the guy to keep this running game going. And at the end of the day, they have Lamar back there. So as long as he's there, the running game should be good.
That's what I was going to say. So is there now pressure on Lamar?
Oh, yeah.
With all the injuries?
A lot of pressure. And, I mean, on top of this already being a big year for him, he's trying to get a new contract. He's trying to get an extension going on. And now he's on his fourth running back before he even gets to play a regular season game. It's big for him. It's going to put a lot of pressure on him. Some of his rookie receiver, Rashad Bateman, he's on the injury list right now. He won't be there for the first few weeks of the season. Sammy Watkins and Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews, the tight end who just got a new deal. A lot of pressure is on these guys now to make plays because the running game may not be as good as it's been the last few years. The Ravens have been the best rushing team in the league the last 2 years.
Right. And so now let's look ahead to Monday night. What are your thoughts? What do you see?
Well, this should still be – I think this will be a game that the Ravens should win. The Raiders just didn't do a lot for me this offseason. I still thought their draft was questionable per usual. They are going to be having fans back in that – and what they people like to call the Death Star, their new stadium out there in Vegas. So it's definitely going to be live. It's definitely going to be packed. The Ravens got to come out. Nobody's going to feel sorry for them. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to feel sorry for them with the result. And I don't think that these guys are going to feel sorry for themselves. So more pressure, we could see what this makes out of Lamar. I tend to think that this is going to pull the best out of him, but some things may be out of his hands. But I do still expect the Ravens to go out and get the job done.
All right. So you'll be back on Tuesday with the takeaways from the game on Monday night?
Will do.
All right. Thank you.
And up next is we have your live sports with Dre and Kendra.
Hey, thank you, Demi, as always. And Kendra, you're out there too. How are you feeling?
I'm doing good. How are you guys feeling?
We're good. We're good.
I know you're happy.
Yes. It was pretty sloppy, but he got the job done.
So how do you feel overall about the game last night?
I just feel like you can tell both of those teams didn't play a lot of their starters during preseason. And it showed because there was a lot of drop balls by both teams. It was just a little sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first game of the season. Even with preseason, you know that it's going to be sloppy. It's always the first game. And honestly, teams don't really get into a groove in the NFL until, honestly, about November. Because last night was a classic case of you knew that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were the superior team, but they let Dallas just hang in there. Granted, it was a good, entertaining game, but that game should not have been that close.
Right.
Dallas shouldn't have even taken the lead whatsoever. And go ahead, Kendra.
But did you see what they tried to do? I don't think they expected Dallas to be that good. You see the defensive coordinator for the Buccaneers, he really was trying to blitz his front five. But then once he seen that Dak Prescott was making those throws, he kind of was like doing half of him. He's like, okay, guys, let's just hang back on the blitz and let's see if he can make those throws without secondary.
Yeah, I do give the Dallas Cowboys credit because they did have a real good game plan. But if this game was played, like I said, in November or December, it wouldn't even been this close. To me, it wouldn't have been this close. Now, I do respect Dak Prescott for what he said to Tom Brady, because you could see that he said, we'll see you again. Mm-hmm. And it caught Tom Brady off guard, like who are you talking to? But I like that attitude that Dak Prescott has. And you can see that he's clearly the leader of this team.
Yeah.
How did you? Okay. Oh, boy.
Go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, no, I sitting there just watching the game. It was a very good game. I mean, I stayed up until the very end, and you know, as always, I was like, why are you giving him so much time on the clock for the last drive? You know, so that they didn't, you know, like try and run the clock down. So, but I'll be surprised if the field goal kicker is back. I mean, he shanked a few of them.
Oh, well, they might be stuck, actually. Right. Who knows? But, yeah, you need a kicker.
Mm-hmm.
Do y'all remember that Instagram trend where it was like a lady talking about you about to lose your job? That was him last night.
Right. Every time he kicked, I was like, he's not going to be back.
Yeah. I mean,
and how did you
Oh, go ahead, Gedra.
Mr. Lee, how did you feel about, yes, I know there's a lot of talk about Dak Prescott not playing, you know, the injury to his throwing shoulder. Like, mm-hmm. How did you feel that? Like, how was he, like, his first debut back?
I thought, I saw a couple of passes where I thought he kind of short-armed it. Like, he wasn't stretched out. There was a ball that dropped, like, 3 or 4 yards short of the receiver. I mean, I noticed. That was what I personally noticed. But I also noticed that Ezekiel Elliott is, like, overrated. I mean, I don't think he did that well in that game either, you know?
You know, I just had a debate with one of my friends, and he swears that it's not Zeke, but he swears that it's the offensive line, and that the Cowboys have put too much effort into their receivers. But mm-hmm. I disagree, because mm-hmm. I said that if the passing game has opened up, and what's really happened is that the offense has gone from Zeke being the man to now mm-hmm. Dak being the man, because they're so dependent upon Dak Prescott to make a play. And if Dak Prescott has a bad game, you can see that the Cowboys are not going to be in it. And since 2019, if the Cowboys have not scored 30 points, mm-hmm. they have been 0-17.
Right. And he picked up, I just looked it up on the Google machine, 33 yards yesterday, rushing, yeah, I believe.
Absolutely ridiculous. Right. So. You expect more out of Dak Prescott, out of Zeke, especially this year, because everybody keeps saying from the Cowboys camp that he's in the best shape that he's ever been in.
Right. Yep.
And did y'all see where he was tackled basically by the defensive player? And a lot of even Skip Bayless was like, he's not who he once was. And you know how he felt about the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, he's not who he once was. And normal elite Ezekiel Elliott are just stiff on him and stiff on him.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt that he didn't contribute like he was supposed to last night. And yeah. I'm not a Cowboys fan at all.
And it would help the offense so much more if you had it, because, you know, they were supposed to have that 1-2-3 punch with Amari Cooper, right. Dak Prescott, and Ezekiel Elliott. They don't have that right now. And they're stuck because Zeke is contracted there for a while.
Right.
And they have to pay him on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they got to figure something out in Dallas.
Yeah.
There's some more games, though. This is week one coming up on Sunday. Any games that stand out to you, Kendra?
I just want to see what the Ravens team does. Right. I know they lost a lot of players. And if they win this game, I would be kind of shocked. I'm not going to lie to you.
You know what? I'll save my prediction for the Ravens on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about this Rams-Bears game, because I know that the fans are going to want to see Justin Fields out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen yet, but I'm curious about that one. Aaron Rodgers and with the Packers and the Saints, because Jameis Winston is now the starting quarterback over there with the Saints, so their new direction and how Aaron Rodgers is going to treat this season. So there's a lot of storylines to some of these games, and I can give you
–
and I can get, I'll tell you my upset already – for Sunday, I think the Browns are going to beat the Chiefs.
Really?
I think week one always has a weird upset, and I could just see it happening.
That's the one,
especially because they played each other in the playoffs.
Right.
I could see that happening.
I'm not going to lie to you, though. I'm really looking forward to seeing what these young quarterbacks can do.
Oh, yeah. Especially like Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, who are already starting right now, and the guy from the Jets, can't remember him.
Zach Wilson.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how he does, because they face the Panthers, so and then, you know, that Sam Darnold over there. So that'll be that's another great storyline right there. So the NFL's got some entertaining games this upcoming week.
Right, and I'm looking at my Giants. It says Barkley is 100%. I'm not sure if he's going to play, but, you know, also Daniel Jones. It's, you know, put up or shut up now, because he's...
Oh, yeah. This is a big break. And the division is winnable for y'all.
Right, that's true.
But real quick, before the Chiefs-Browns game... I'm hoping that the Chiefs do win the game, because they play the Ravens the following week, and the Ravens could use a W over the Chiefs.
Right.
But if the Chiefs ain't losing back-to-back games, but I just have a feeling they'll lose to the Browns before they lose to the Ravens. That's just me. Mm.
Yep.
But Thank you, though, for this time. And on to Hollywood and Entertainment with Demi.
Thank you. Thanks, Dre. Thanks, Kendra. So here's what's trending in your entertainment. Actress-singer Jennifer Hudson is one step away from the coveted status of becoming an EGOT winner, which is the recipient of an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony Award. On Thursday, Hudson won an Emmy Award as an executive producer of Baba Yaga, a 27-minute animated fairy tale made for the Oculus Quest. The show won in the category of Outstanding Interactive Media for a Daytime Program. Currently, Hudson has an Emmy, Grammy, and Oscar that she won for Best Supporting Actress in 2006 as Effie White in the film Dreamgirls. The EGO winner would need another run on Broadway to capture a Tony Award. In 2016, she played Suge Avery in The Color Purple on Broadway. A few EGO winners that we know of in the Black community are Whoopi Goldberg and John Legend. The Biggest Night in Hip Hop is returning to BET for its 16th annual Hip Hop Awards. Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion lead the nominations for this year's awards, nabbing 9 nominations apiece. Drake earned 8 nominations across 7 categories, and he's up for Hip Hop Artist of the Year and Song of the Year. Other rappers and artists who scored nominations include Moneybagg Yo, Tyler the Creator, Migos, DJ Khaled, Lil Nas X, and J. Cole. The award show premieres Tuesday, October 5th. And Randy, you have some entertainment news.
Yes, I have 2 things. Okay. And Dre would be interested in this. It said that Bill Cosby planning a new comedy tour, but it reportedly has put it on pause indefinitely because he has another trial coming up.
He needs to be put on pause indefinitely.
he has another, I think, a civil trial coming up from a lawsuit filed in 2014.
Good. So, put him back. Right. Put him back.
And then one of the other things that came up last night. Go ahead.
I just want to make. I don't think that it's smart that he goes on a comedy tour. I mean, I'm sure people would go see him because, you know, they're ignorant. But I don't know. I just think it's not. He's old. Like what? Like what is his comedy stances now? Like, and surely I really don't care.
Right.
You're right. I'm curious to see what he would even say because I remember he had a real dispute with I think it was D.L. Hughley about. You know, the way that he just does comedy.
Right.
Right.
And I think Eddie Murphy, too, said something about Bill calling him up about the way he does comedy. So you're right. How do you, as a comedian, how do you translate your views to current day?
Right.
I mean, I would be curious. I'm not going to say I'm going to support the man or the show whatsoever. Yeah, no. But I'm just curious to see how he would do that, though.
Exactly.
In the thing, it says, he denied all allegations, but why he's putting this on pause is that he's concerned the legal case would be the media's main focus when he toured.
It would be. Wherever he goes, right. Even if he didn't have another trial, it would still be a circus.
Even if he went on tour, people would still bring up the fact that he was convicted.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Each time.
Exactly.
One other thing I had was last night's National Anthem. Michelle Williams is getting criticism over it.
So,
I heard it. I didn't think it was bad.
I didn't think it was bad. She hit every note. She was on beat, on tune, basically. Some fans were saying that she butchered the National Anthem.
Dragging her on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, dragging her.
She's the one member, though, who always just gets heat. I don't know why.
For no reason. And, you know,
she stepped in for the person that
got kicked out. Remember, we talked about that last night. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, about the artist who didn't want to get vaccinated, so she couldn't sing the national anthem. And so here's Michelle Williams being called in at the 12th hour, like, I'm here. And I thought she did a good job. And then you have to remind yourself, like, she's also a gospel singer. Mm-hmm. So the rendition that she put together, they called it jazzy, but it sounds like gospel.
Right.
Mm. Jazz gospel.
Jazz gospel.
Shout out to Mark Waldron, too. Mm. Sundays at 5. Instruments of Praise.
There you go.
Make sure you listen. But I thought she did a good job. And there, you know, the Beehive was coming
to
her rescue.
I was going
to
say, the Beehive.
They came to her rescue. They was like, we got to save our girl. Y'all.
There you go.
They were coming out. Boy. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought she did a good job getting there and having to put it together in the way that she did. I'm not sure what kind of rehearsal she had, mm-hmm. but I felt like it was last minute. And she did a good job. She has a great singing voice, and you know, she has a great singing voice to win Grammys. So people need to mind their business.
Yeah,
right. And I actually thought NBC did a great job. They actually played the Black National Anthem.
Oh yeah, because they're doing.
I know
that
they're
now.
Doing it,
yeah.
But sometimes before the game they don't show it.
Right.
But last night they did.
Excellent! That's really good.
I need them to do it more than just opening day, though.
No, they do it. I thought they do it every.
I thought they did it every game.
Yeah, they did it
I
every
can check,
game.
But yeah,
because they sing the.
I know.
Do they not sing the national anthem at every game?
No, they still do.
They still do.
Right. So yeah. they sing the national anthem at every game, and they also do the Lift Black, Every Voice and Sing.
Well, it might be too, because I might. That's I tune in a little
you
late.
I mean, you're kind of tuning out.
All right. So, but that was all I had. It's Friday, too.
It's Friday. Happy Friday.
Yes, happy Friday.
Get into the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Be safe out there.
Absolutely.
Right. So thank you, everyone. We want to thank you for joining us here on the Morgan News Hour. And we'll see you back on Monday. I'm Randy Reed.
I'm Demi Goff. Thank you, guys. Have a good weekend. Be safe again. Get some crack.
Our production tonight was brought to you by the students in the School of Global Journalism and Communication right here at Morgan State University. In our learning lab here at the studios of WEAA 88.9 FM. Led by Dean Jacqueline Jones and Station Manager Robert Shahid. Thank you to our student reporters, Devontae Berry, Kaisha Hancock, Chardonnay Jackson, Jasmine Johnson, Rochelle Keaton, David Lance, Gabriel Ortiz, Kendra Pugh, Carol Williams, and an extra special thanks to Andre Melton for operating the board tonight.